and you're on the front porch. I'm Scott Finn, Executive Director of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, along with Rick Wilson and Lori Lynn. And this week, the sugary drink tax. Governor Justice is now in support of it. Also, we'll talk about tolls, and we're going to talk about transgender students. There's a lot of action going on at the federal level. How does that affect us here in West Virginia? Support for The Front Porch comes from WVGazetteMail.com with two editorial pages, one liberal, one conservative, kind of like The Front Porch. Check it out, WVGazetteMail.com. So this week, Governor Justice came out with his second major plan, how to fill the $500 million or so budget hole. And this plan had all sorts of new information, including a tax on sugary drinks. And Rick, being the liberal that you are, of course, you're a lover of all taxes, but you particularly like this one. What is it about the sugar drink tax that you think is a good idea?
We consume a lot of sugary drinks in West Virginia, in the state. I read somewhere the average American drinks about 45 gallons of it a year. It has a lot of negative health consequences like diabetes and other chronic illnesses. And so many of these things are actually passed on to the public in healthcare costs. So it's just almost like the benefit principle. If this is something that contributes to medical costs, I think it's okay to tax it and maybe dedicate some of that funding toward healthcare costs.
Lori, I know you are no fan of sugary drinks, but how do you feel about this proposal?
I think the left will not be happy until we are all walking around drinking warm tap water out of Nalgene bottles. And, you know, you guys know I don't like sugary drinks. As a tax, that's one that I'm pretty okay with. It does add an additional cost to a pretty unhealthy behavior. But, yeah, I would like to definitely see it. And I think it does apply only to actual sugary beverages. We've seen other places in the U.S. try to sweep in diet sodas, basically any kind of fun drink into it. And I think that that's excessive. But yeah, if we cabin it to just sugary drinks, I think it's pretty good, although I don't see a whole lot of interest in it on the Republican side.
So I have to wait. I got to jump in. Lori, sorry. Like, this aggression will not stand, man. Like,
did I attack your Nalgene bottle?
No, the Nalgene doesn't bother me. I'm totally down with drinking things with caffeine and alcohol, though I don't think caffeine and alcohol should be together because that's just against God. You just might wind up right where you started.
There goes our budding Red Bull sponsorship. Just gone. Thanks,
and
man.
We have seen the Beverage Association lobby pretty hard against it, and they have come out very strongly, and it'll be interesting to see if they're able to tamp down any enthusiasm for it.
I guess the main argument against this is, you know, at what point does the state try to interfere with every part of our lives, you know?
Well, we have a real serious budget crisis in West Virginia that's going to affect the quality of life, and these things do have significant health care costs. So
we have a governor that came out with one tax plan. It was bigger. Now he's coming out with a second one that's slightly smaller and offering more unspecified cuts. Where do you see this all going, Rick? Where do you think this is going to end?
I have no idea. It's going to be really interesting. I do think that this has been the year of metaphors, you know, like patients spurting blood and things like that. I think the governor is right in the sense that we're at the point where huge major cuts will make the West Virginia we're used to really a lot different, and I don't think better. So,
yeah, he's negotiating against himself at this point, which you kind of don't want to do. Who knows what were the internal thinking behind, you know, throwing out another plan a couple weeks after he threw out the first plan. I think it's in the Republicans' interest to wait and see and push it until probably, you know, close to the end of the session. And you saw the governor this week come out with this budget clock that he has out there in the hallway of the legislature, kind of trying to put pressure on them to go ahead and show some leg on what they want to do. I think they are not going to do that for a little while yet.
So, Rick, what's your Bible verse for the week?
Well, going on the sugary drink beverage, it's not so much a Bible verse, but an observation. John the Baptist, forerunner of Jesus, lived on locusts, which are basically grasshoppers, and wild honey. So I think the implication is if you're going to derive a significant part of your diet from sugary things, you should offset that with bugs for like protein and roughage.
And not tax the bugs, of course.
No, I mean, they're kind of free range. Now, if you sell the bugs, become commodified, you know, which is the nature of the capitalist system, man, then, you know, it might be on. So.
We do have a revenue problem.
Okay, podcast listeners, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about transgender students. There's been a change at the presidential level. How does it affect West Virginia? Where are we with this issue? More from Lori Lynn in just a moment. But first, now more than ever, it's good to remind ourselves of our values. We believe in civil conversation. We believe that the truth matters. We believe in the dignity of every person. These are our values. This is what public broadcasting is all about. And this is what you support when you listen and when you become a member. Thank you for helping to tell West Virginia's story. Okay, we're back, and we're going to be talking about transgender students in West Virginia. Now, we've done a whole episode about this last year, and it's just this fascinating change in society. Growing up, I never thought I'd see, you know, gay marriage become the law of the land. But transgender issues, they weren't even on my radar screen. And now all of a sudden we have, you know, students showing up at schools, biologically born, let's say, as a female and asking to be in the male bathroom. And Lori, what's the latest on this and what's your thinking on it?
The Obama administration had sent a letter out to schools from the Department of Justice, Department of Education, saying that the word sex under Title IX is supposed to now mean gender identity. So students were to be allowed to use it wasn't just bathrooms, locker rooms, showers, just, you know, general facilities in accordance with their gender identity, not necessarily their biological, you know, born sex. And then the Trump administration has now rescinded that letter. So they've basically said, you know, back to the way it was before, where the idea being it's now a state and local thing, mainly local, case by case. And there's a, you know, case before the Supreme Court. It's kind of unclear. The Supreme Court's right now considering whether they want to continue to actually hear that case. They probably will not, I think, is the best guess.
Rick, what do you think?
Well, you know, going back to your initial comments, Scott, I'm surprised, looking back at changes over my lifetime, that we had marriage equality before we had NDEF, that anti-discrimination thing. I still think that's really bizarre. And that's a result of the court system, I think, really, more than...
The court's getting ahead of maybe some states and some legislatures.
Yeah, I think that's the case. It's interesting. The day we're recording this is there's an event going on at the Capitol. All kinds are welcome here, which is sort of devoted to the non-discrimination thing. I think people have trouble with transgender issues because the human tendency to binary oppositions, and that people who are transgender sort of don't fit into that easy pattern. I think these people are really highly at risk for suicide, for being hurt by others, for being bullied in an extreme way.
I mean, aren't we talking about a clash of different rights, Lori, in that you have students who want to be recognized in one way, and you have other students that don't want maybe those students to be in their locker rooms or bathrooms and that sort of thing, and how do you decide these things?
Yeah, I think it's pretty disingenuous for people to pretend that there aren't competing interests here, right? I think you're exactly right, Scott. There's the interest in a transgender boy who genuinely does not want to be in the girls' bathroom because he does not believe that he is a girl. And you also have interests of, you know, privacy interests. I mean, I've been a 14-year-old girl. I'm very glad that I did not, you know, have to undress in front of people with penises or see penises in my locker room. I mean, I find it sort of amazing that feminists, for one thing, you know, kind of don't see that as a legitimate thing to be at least a little bit worried about. And I would say, you know, to the left, if you really want to make this about telling dads, you know, you're a bigot, if you're a little bit worried about your 14-year-old girl having to see this in her shower, then it's probably going to be a pretty difficult thing for you to sell, I think.
Honestly, I don't know if there's any 14-year-old girl, and I'm the father one, who wants to get undressed in front of anybody else. Maybe there's just, we should have a conversation about changing notions of privacy in general to deal with it. Does this mean it's the end of gender? I mean, in that way, if you start having unisex everything, which is kind of what we're moving toward, it means that we no longer have these gendered experiences. Is that what we're moving toward? And is that a good thing, Rick?
People often define gender as what it means in a given society in a given place. And that's obviously changes over time at different points in history and different societies. So it's not a really fixed entity. I don't think it ever has been.
Maybe we should just get used to the fact that gender is a spectrum and not a binary choice.
Maybe some people just got to pee too, is the other thing.
I think there were practical issues that we should just like deal with. And one of them is, do we really need to have the potty police, as you've said before? But on the other hand, there are other cases where, and you're talking about locker rooms, where I could see that there's a real legitimate privacy issue there.
And I think schools really have the toughest thing. I mean, it's different if you're talking about a restroom on, you know, the side of a highway where, yeah, I'm sure I've been in a restroom with transgender women. I'm not bothered by that in the least. The problem with a school is you're dealing with, you know, somebody who was Sally last week is now Sam. That's a person you know. It's very hard to kind of make that adjustment. And like you said, you're not only talking about restrooms. You're talking about more intimate things. You're talking even about sports teams. There have been questions about, you know, can someone who was born male now play on a female sports team? And people get very worked up about that.
School bathrooms can be scary for a lot of different reasons that have nothing to do with this. And that
I do wonder if there will be a bill this year in West Virginia. Last year, of course, there was one, but it died in the Senate, and the Senate president was one of the reasons why it died. And so
talking about the RFRA.
The RFRA bill. I'm sorry, I shouldn't call it the bathroom bill. That was just one potential aspect from that. But do you guys think this is going to happen in the legislature this year, or do you think because of the budget crisis, because the president has rescinded that guidance, does that change things?
I think the media would like nothing more than to have the RFRA fight again, because I think it's something that's so interesting and sexy, and it gets people really riled up. I don't see a lot of appetite for that broadly. I think certainly Mitch Carmichael, now Senate president, has no interest in doing that, so I would not expect to see that again.
Back to the bathroom thing, this sort of triggers traumatic memories for me, because in junior high, I got paddled for smoking in the school bathroom, and I still remember the guy who ratted us out, you know? So.
Whoa. Okay, we got to explore this a little bit. First of all, what year is this?
It was in the 70s.
And there were still paddling students?
Yeah, this guy was a golfer, too, so I could feel it for a couple of days.
Wait, who was it? A principal?
It was a vice principal.
Oh my goodness.
It's always the vice principal.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, they were in charge of torture.
And you're from the you were in high school in the 70s. I was high school in the 80s. You're in the 90s, early 90s, right? So slightly different eras. In my era, paddling still existed in theory, but never was used. And I bet you never had it happen to you.
There was a rumor in our middle school that the vice principal, again, had a paddle with holes in it, so it would hurt extra. Of course, no one ever actually saw this paddle.
There were rumors of electric paddles,
right,
too.
Nails, all that.
So, man, you're like a curiosity. You were paddling.
I was paddling. This was hard. It was like 3 whacks. And these are made. I mean, this is not like being spanked. This was like a big deal.
What effect did it have on your behavior?
Well, I didn't smoke in the bathroom anymore, and I hated the guy that ratted me out. But
it's effective.
Yeah.
Didn't stop me from smoking at the time, which I should never have done. And I should have paid, adequate cigarette taxes when I was...
Junior high is just terrible. I think left and right should be able to agree on that. And it's unfortunate that this issue, adds to all of the drama. And, being a school administrator these days and probably pretty much throughout all history is a pretty rough job.
It's hard enough to grow up, and then now having to make all these decisions about who you are so early. One of my hopes would be that we let kids have time to think about these things as a society and make these big decisions about their lives. Let's pretend that you get to decide your gender. Okay, when? How? Is it permanent? Do I have to have a sex change for that to kick in, or does it count if I just say I want to change?
Well, the idea on the very kind of cutting edge of this is that you don't assign any gender at birth to the child. You don't even tell people, what's in the diaper. You have a gender-neutral pronoun, and then when the child is, 6, 7, 8, then they can decide for themselves what they feel like.
That's a radical change,
extremely,
to humankind. And so on one hand, if my daughter hears this, she's going to be on my case, because to her it's just black and white. People choose their gender. But I also have sympathy for people that are really trying to figure this thing out, and giving them time to figure it out, I think, was a wise thing, and not being judgmental about them trying to figure things out, just like we shouldn't be judgmental to transgender youth who are trying to figure things out, too.
I think this is something that kids could probably figure out, but have we talked about that there's a great Greek myth to the point of this? I don't know if we've talked about it on the front porch. Tiresias, who was this blind seer, was someone who was at one point turned into a woman and then turned back into a male. And the reason he's blind is Zeus and Hera got into an argument about whether men or women enjoyed sex more.
Oh, right. Yes, I know that. Yes.
So they had that. They asked Tiresias. Yeah, mm-hmm. Zeus and his wife arguing about whether, you know, which
sex. So they had to have
sex.
Someone experience both.
Right. And they're trying to get the upper hand because, you know, Zeus didn't want to admit that men did and Hera didn't want to admit that. And so if the opposite sex enjoyed it more, that's what you want.
So I don't need this sex thing. You need it more than I do.
And anyway, so they brought in Tiresias to settle the argument, and he said that women enjoyed it much more, and he was struck blind by Hera for doing that. So some of these things, you know, you just can't win. You know?
Which is such a woman thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's The Front Porch. I'm Scott Finn, Executive Director of West Virginia Public Broadcasting. If we're still on the air next week, you will hear from Rick Wilson of the American Friends Service Committee.
Scott, if they let us do the Golden Shower episode, I don't think they can take us out for that one.
And Lori Lynn, thanks for joining us, Lori.
Sure thing.
You get the last word, Lori. Anything else on this?
We should note that there was a study recently, I don't know anything about the methodology of this, can't vouch for it, but it said that West Virginia has the highest percentage of transgender teens per capita of any state. I think it's at 1 in 100 between the ages of 13 and 17. Or transgender, again, make of that what you will. But
either that's a fascinating thing that needs to be researched, or it might be an artifact of the small number of people in West Virginia and something. Yeah. But we should look into that. And by the way, okay, this is the second time that we've done the show that we have not actually talked to a transgendered person about this issue.
True.
So I promise you, we will. It's only laziness. It's really not any animus against transgendered people. We will get a transgender person on the show to talk about the issues that they're dealing with in their daily life. If that describes you, then send me a tweet at RadioFin, at WVPundit, or at El Cabrero, and let us know about your situation. We might have you on The Front Porch. Thanks for listening.